brought to you by Black Knight. It's the technology.ie podcast, episode 43 for September 6th, 2012, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinichon. Dias Marievic, Skith Voltarovistock. Hello and welcome to technology.ie. This is Conor Muinichon in the Edgecast Media Studio, and from Carlow, County Carlow, it's the Black Knight CEO, Michaela Nealon. Hi, Michaela.
Hi, Con.
You're back at home base?
I am.
Good. Much better broadband than we had when we spoke to you from your hotel prior to you flying out last weekend. You went for a fun weekend in London, though.
Yeah, I went over for the James Bond exhibition in the Barbican.
Tell us.
Well, the funny thing is this, Con. I thought it was going to be, you know, nice, quiet weekend, go over to London, do that, potter about, come back. But even my flight over to London made the headlines.
Oh, I missed that. What happened?
The flight, there was some issue with the hydraulics or something. So we ended up having to turn around when we were halfway across the Irish Sea, jettison the fuel and come in for an emergency landing with all the emergency vehicles and everything on the runway in Dublin Airport.
Oh, that was fun. A little bit nerve-wracking, I'd say.
No. I mean, yeah, I travel quite a bit, so statistically,
it's going to happen.
It's going to happen at some stage. And it actually, you know, the crew and everything else were very calm, and I kind of take the view, well, look, you know, if you're in a plane crash, you're in a plane crash. There's no point getting freaked out about it. So, but anyway, yeah, the exhibition was very, very good. Absolutely. It was geek-tastically, bond-tastically Ian Fleming 007 goodness.
You were probably inspired by that stiff upper lip attitude to danger and devil may care.
Oh, nice one on the puns there, Con.
Go on, yeah?
No, the exhibition, I mean, it's very, very well laid out. As you're going into the Barbican, you're greeted by Sean Connery standing beside one of the classic, you know, Bond cars from the 60s. And then you go in and they do this kind of staggered admission thing.
I'm guessing it's a waxwork, Sean Connery, not the real thing.
Unfortunately, yes, waxwork. A younger Sean Connery waxwork.
Some drama critics might say difficult to tell the difference, but who knows?
I know. Be nice. And then, you know, you go through the exhibition and there's several sections within it, and you have, you know, clips from various films, and then you have gadgets and gizmos and drawings of how they're put together, the sets, insight into how some of the props were made. I mean, you know, some of these props that on screen look absolutely fantastic, and then they actually explain, you know, this was made from, you know, a cereal box and something else, but it looks really well on camera.
Right.
And it was good fun. It was well worth the trip. Really enjoyed that. There's even a martini bar on the first floor in the Barbican while the exhibition's on, where you can go in and get martinis inspired by the movies. Mm. So you have, like, you know, a Vesper martini, or, you know, the classic shaken not stirred, and all this kind of thing. Unfortunately, I haven't had lunch, so I couldn't partake. But well worth the trip. Absolutely fantastic exhibition. Well done to the Barbican.
Where are we in the Bond scheme of things at the moment? Is there a movie in production? Is there one coming out soon?
I can't. I'm very upset if you ask me these kind of questions.
Absolutely no idea. I don't think I've seen any of the last three or four of them, but go on.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
It is, yeah.
Skyfall goes on general release in the UK and Ireland at the end of October.
Yeah.
This year is the 50 years of Bond on screen. And the new James Bond film will be starring Daniel Craig as James Bond. He's joined by Bernice, what's her name, Mallow or something. I'm trying to remember her name and failing. And it's going to be yet another big Bond production. I mean, they've already done quite a bit of work on promoting it. I mean, if you remember during the opening sequence of the Olympics,
that's right, yeah.
Craig went to pick up the Queen in Buckingham Palace, and then they parachute in and all that kind of thing. So Skyfall, end of October. It's getting released in the UK and Ireland a couple of weeks before it gets the release in the States. And who's actually in it? Let me double check. Oh, yeah. Javier Bardem plays the baddie. And the girls for this film are Bernice Marlowe. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. She's a French actress. And Naomi Harris.
Very good. So maybe I will go and see it or something like that. Casino Royale was the last one, wasn't it?
No.
Is that how out of date I am now?
Yeah, well, the Casino Royale was the first...
novel.
The Casino Royale was the first Bond film starring Daniel Craig.
Ah, yes.
And the one after that was Quantum of Solace.
Right.
Which co-starred Olga Kurylenko.
You see,
Ukrainian or something.
This is kind of tragic, really. I could tell you all about Harry Potter now, Michele, and Ice Age 4 was the latest film I think I was at. So,
we can talk about the Sorting Hat in the studio if you want. I don't mind.
No, we'll leave it and we'll move on. We'll get into tech, but it's just interesting, and it kind of leads us into the first thing we wanted to talk about this week on the show, Michele. Later, we're going to talk about new releases. We're going to talk about what's up and coming announcements. By Microsoft on the enterprise scale and on the palm top scale in terms of phones and what's coming out from Microsoft and Nokia. We're going to talk about Apple rumours and what may or may not be coming out very soon indeed from them. And but first let's get, and it's interesting, as I say, my movie watching and a lot of my technology and a lot of stuff I do nowadays is maybe led by the fact that I'm perhaps, my role as a parent is more defines me more than perhaps my role as an adult nowadays, and so it's interesting to see what James Larkin blogged on technology.ie this week. He's got a post on the ultimate geek pram.
Yeah, this is something else. Well, this blew me away. Absolutely, wow.
You've got a promo there. There's a video there for it. Do you want to run that? Is it anything that we can listen to, or is it just
No. I mean, it's just this is the ultimate pram. It's got everything that a geek could possibly ask for in a pram. Now, that may sound a little strange. I mean, we're talking a pram. I mean, we're not talking about a car. We're not talking about a computer. But this is a pram that has running lights, pathway lights, an LCD dashboard that shows you with a thermometer, a speedometer, odometers, and wait for it. It's even got a charging thing in it, so you can charge your mobile phone whilst you take the child out for a walk.
Fantastic. Absolutely. This is what we were missing when I was pushing them around in prams, if we'd had something like this. Does it have RSS or anything like that built in? Does it have what? Internet built in or something? USB?
I don't know. I mean, looking at this now, and to be perfectly honest, I'm not being facetious. I'm just kind of going... Yeah. It might do. Oh, my God, it might do.
I'm just reading what James has written. You're reading Pram, and what on earth is this technology.ie? Well, I'm a relatively new dad, he says, so I end up getting links to things like this all the time. And he says, one button touch and it opens and closes. Eek, he says, I have an engineer degree. The first time I got out our current pram, I actually wondered if the degree was worth anything. He says it's self-charging. It generates power while you walk. You can charge your phone. Yeah, as you were saying, running lights and pathway lights. Not that you should be keeping your baby out too late, but wow. It's impressive. It's called the Origami. That's the name of the device or the company. I'm not sure.
I think that's the name of the actual device. Now, this is, I don't know how much normal prams or strollers or whatever the hell you call them cost. I'm sorry, I just don't know. It's retails in the US for $849.99.
But the price of what, an iPad?
Well, it'd be a very nice iPad, but okay. Yeah. You can also get color kits. So if you're not happy with the color that your origami comes in, I mean, you can get a hot pink, blue, green, black, red. Okay. There's a car seat adapter. There's a handlebar, bag, and cell phone charger. Okay. All right, I'm sorry. I'm having difficulty.
No, it's funny. It's funny, but you know something, when you do, I think when you become a parent, all right, you definitely do sort of look to see how you can get involved with technology and what you can, how you can bridge, I suppose, your new responsibilities with your long-standing interests. And you know, for many people, it's an opportunity really to see, well, what's the latest and greatest in terms of technology. You know, whether it's transport or other kind of things or tech toys or things like that as well. It's a good one. Origami is what it is. Some interesting comments on the article from that as well. From one from Laura Chakowski, says if she ever has kids, I want this. She said she's one of the leading lights in Irish Linux users. Is commenting on that. And a Twitter user called Fecker, F-E-K-E-R, said his wife would love this. That's on technology.ie this week. Let's move on, Michaela. What else do we want to talk about this week? Texts from Dog. Some people probably know what this is about, and it's turning into a book, you say, and it's the first I've ever heard about it. Had you been following this before?
Oh yes. I mean, yeah. totally addicted.
So it's a Tumblr blog.
Well, it's a Tumblr blog, but it's also a Facebook page.
Okay.
The Tumblr blog, I think I came across it on Facebook. I think somebody shared one of the texts. And what he do, the guy behind this, I don't know how to even describe them. They're so funny. These ridiculous texts, text message conversations between a dog and its owner. And, you know, they're screenshots. Of an iPhone, and you can't help but laugh. I mean, they're absolutely hilarious.
Okay, so I presume there's a certain suspension of disbelief. We all know that dogs don't text, but if a dog could text you on your iPhone, this is what it would look like, I guess.
Well, kind of, but it's very, very funny. But what's in the thing is, he announced earlier this evening that his book is available for pre-order on Amazon. So went off and had a look at that, and you went, okay, yeah, maybe I might buy this, maybe I won't. I mean, it'd be a bit of fun.
Yeah. You wonder, though, I mean, this is in the tradition of blogs being mined and harvested by publishers and getting turned into books here.
Hold on a second. But this is also, like, say, the way Gary Trudeau or any of these kind of cartoonists, their stuff gets turned into a book. I mean, nobody gets upset about that.
So in that situation, it's published, as you say, serially in a newspaper and then gets turned into a book is what you mean?
It's the same kind of concept.
No, I'm not even getting as far as saying getting upset about it, although we'll talk about the TechCrunch commentary on that in just a moment. But as I say, first of all, just to put this in context, there are things like we had Grandad's Ramblings, wasn't it, here in Ireland, got turned into a book. That's there's been a few Irish blogs turned into books. What was that fellow with the cheeky fellow from Dublin? What was his name again? The Smoker. Well, 20 Major.
20 Major, yeah, 20 Major had one or two books. Grandad had one or two books.
Yeah.
There were a few others. And, you know, it's
Shit
not,
My Dad Says is the big one in the States. That's got turned from a Twitter account into a TV series.
A Twitter account, two books, and a TV series. I think the TV series was cancelled after one run, which is a pity because it was actually quite amusing.
So fair enough, you know, and this is there's no question but that this is how, if you're looking for talent nowadays, if you're looking for humour or original content of any kind, you're going to find it there. And equally, if you're looking to become to develop a name for yourself, to become published or anything like that, you really should start dipping your toe into social media, blogging, tweeting, whatever it might be. But TechCrunch are unimpressed. They wrote, as you said yourself, a rather bitchy piece about the book deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of these pieces, kind of like, oh, you know, what is the world coming to? The end is nigh, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the problem I find with TechCrunch is that a lot of the articles, I don't know why the hell they write them. Mm. It's like, I know that it's kind of publish or die and they have to pump out a certain number of articles per day, but some of them, you're just kind of going, eh. What was the point behind this?
Well, it's link bait, really. It's being controversial for the sake of it. I mean, I know we've had people on the show before, and they've said this is how it works. This is how, you know, what was the guy? No, actually, wasn't it some guy had wrote a book about this recently that you were linking to?
Ryan Holiday book.
Yeah. This is how publishing works nowadays. It's all about page impressions, getting people to click through and read what you have to say. And you don't do that by being, you know, reasoned and wise.
No, you don't. I mean, there is that. But it, at the same time, it's just like, you know, why do people, I don't know. I just understand this kind of thing. I mean, okay, sure. If you'd actually wanted to, if you picked up the book and reviewed it and said, you know, it's a terrible book, it shouldn't have been published, what a waste of money, fine. But I mean, at the same time, you read some of these articles, you're going, is it a case of that they genuinely feel this, or is it more to do with the fact that they didn't get a book deal?
Yeah, that's probably that.
You know, that's the thing. Yeah.
I don't think it's anything like that. I think it's just let's get a blog post out of this. This man John Biggs, who wrote this a couple of weeks back, as you say, on TechCrunch, that was probably one of a dozen blog posts he had to get out that day.
Quite possibly. Yeah. Quite possibly. I don't know who the guy is, and to be perfectly honest, I don't really care.
Yeah.
I had a quick scan over the article. And I thought myself, you know. Talk about bitchy and just, you know, not adding anything to anything.
Let's move on. You say Ryanair have lost the plot. Why?
Oh my God! I'm still not sure whether this is a clever ploy from Ryanair to get a bit of extra revenue, or are they trolling us by putting this out? I mean, again, a kind of a link bait thing. Let's get everybody talking about. How ridiculous Ryanair are.
I'd say there's probably a little bit of both in it. It's a story on technology.ie this week that you've posted. They've launched an iPhone app, which sounds reasonable enough. If you want to buy Ryanair flights, here's a mobile app to help you do so. But, Michele, as you point out, they're charging for it, for the app.
Well, there's two things. First off, they're charging for the app. Now, I just don't get this, right? You're making it easier, potentially, for people to spend money with your company. Why on earth would you charge people for that facility? That makes no sense to me. And none of the other airlines do this. I mean, I was looking at my phone earlier. I've got the app from Air France. I've got KLM. I've got SkyTeam. I might even have Delta, British Airways, and a couple of other ones on there. I mean, some of them I don't ever really use that often, but I do use the Air France one. I mean, the Air France, I've even got the Aer Lingus one, which is, by the way, terrible. With the Air France app, I log in, it connects through to my account with Air France, it shows me all my upcoming flights, it hooks into my frequent flyer thing, I can see everything that's going on, how many miles I've accrued, how many miles I've spent. You know, it's quite useful, and I can book stuff, and I can, you know, I think I could even change seats and do other things from this. And like, it'll actually work better than the website, because it's got all that functionality using some kind of API or God knows what.
Yeah, this doesn't make sense. I mean, this is putting an obstacle in place of their sales channel. This is an impediment to sales. It doesn't seem to make any sense. Now, on the one hand, from a headline point of view, we know that they like to joke about charging people to use the toilets. We know that they famously boasted about how stingy they were, saying that they wouldn't allow employees to charge their mobile phones in the office, you know. So that was really one of those kind of, you know, basically we're cheap bastards. Our flights are cheaper than anyone else's because we're mean and stingy, and we're passing that value on to you in the price of the seat, you know, in terms of wherever you want to go. That's fair enough. But this is akin to charging you to use their website.
And you know, the stupid thing is there's no functionality in the damn app that you don't get from the mobile version of their site. So if you look at the screenshots for the app, because there's no way I'm paying $2.99 for the damn thing. I mean, it's not going to happen. Have a look. If you have a look at the screenshots, then on your mobile device, go to m.ryanair.com. You'll see exactly the same thing. So on what planet would anybody in their right mind go off and pay $2.99 for an app that actually doesn't do anything?
So you say in the blog post, so was Ryanair's play with this simply to get everyone talking about them, or was it a serious attempt at squeezing even more revenue out of the travelling public? Well, I think their ploy or their play with this, Michele, was to get people like you to blog about it and tweet about
Possibly. I'm sure that did work, but I don't know. I'm just like going, I don't know. I mean, words fail me. I mean, that's just... That's just crazy stupid.
Not so stupid if they get the publicity, Michele. That's what I'd be inclined to say. And the question is, how many? They probably weighed up the value of the publicity against. Well, maybe I'm really ascribing too much intelligence to them in relation to this. But it's, you know, one way to do it would be to weigh up the value of the publicity that they get from this against what the potential increase in sales that they would get from having a mobile app might actually be. Because one way of looking at it might be to say that only a very small percentage of customers would use a Ryanair mobile app, and most of them would probably book it on their on their laptops or on their... What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, look, you know. I think we've given enough airtime.
You see, this is it.
Come on, move on.
Yeah, let's move on to the
story. Next story. Come on.
Let's move on to the bars.
The
barcodes on the graves. Now, I really, really like this. This is a story in the Daily Mail that you have linked to, Michele, and send me the link for the headline: "The Barcode on a Gravestone, Funeral Directors' Interactive Headstones Launch Tributes to the Departed with a Swipe of a Mobile Phone." Actually, this is interesting. So what it is, it's a QR code. We're familiar with them. They're they're easily scannable with mobile phone cameras, and you see them on all kinds of places. You'll see them on flyers, you'll see them on posters, you'll see them in newspaper ads and things like this. You scan, it might be a piece of text, it might be a number, it might be a price of something. More often than not, it's a URL, and your scan apps. I use one called QR Droid, for example, on my Android phone, and that will scan a QR code very successfully and open up the link to the website or whatever it might be. In fact, it opened up scanning from the photograph of this of the gravestone, which is in the Daily Mail article, scanning that from my laptop screen using my mobile phone, Michele, I was actually able to open the tribute webpage to the deceased who was featured in that particular article.
And what did you think of the website?
I actually opened a mobile version of it. I thought, so in this case, it was simple enough. It was a nice little obituary written about an individual who had died just last year. And I thought it was nice. I thought it was a nice idea. And I thought, as the article goes on to explain, Michele, you can have as elaborate or as simple a web page tribute to a deceased person as you choose to have. And in fact, you can even make it interactive to the extent that you can give people who scan that and who open up that web page, you can, in particular, if you've given them access, you can give them the opportunity to add their own comments about the departed and to engage in a discussion about that person on that web page as well. So what you end up with really is a kind of a living memorial, which is something, Michele, I think we've all experienced to a greater or lesser extent. It's something I've noticed happening on Facebook recently as well, in that a number of people that I've known have and one person in particular has passed away, and that person was quite active on Facebook, and it has been interesting just to see how their Facebook page, to which their friends continue to have access and to be able to comment on, has become a sort of a memorial page for that person. It's become a place where that person's family and friends could leave comments and in fact post information in relation to funeral arrangements and memorial services and things like that as well. It's the guy who's interviewed in this Daily Mail article, he's a funeral director in Dorset, I think, in England, who's come up with this site, qr-memorials.net, I think is the URL that he's got for it, the domain name that he's got for it. .com actually. And he's kind of said, you know, basically that a memorial, you know, should be a living thing, or the memory of a deceased person should be is something that lives on as long as they're discussed and talked about by people who remember them, who knew them. And this really is, I think, a pretty good use of social media, mobile media, and QR codes have finally found something really useful for them. Some people have argued that QR codes have been a solution looking for a problem for a while, and this may well be the problem that that they solve, or that they this may well be the service that they provide. I like it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I thought to myself, look, you know, I think it's a fantastic PR move.
Yeah.
By this this company in the UK. Mm. I thought that was absolutely fantastic. And getting it onto the Daily Mail, which has one of the busiest websites in the world, seemingly. Mm. You know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, that's fantastic. I mean, just practical things though, I was just looking at it and kind of going, okay, the idea is kind of interesting. You know, how the hell do you keep the damn thing clean? I mean, the QR code has to be accessible for somebody to scan it in. Mm. And, you know, what happens if it gets filled up with muck or gets chipped or whatever? I don't know. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Well, but it's a good point, Michele. But I mean, these are actually practical issues that face that are associated with memorials and gravestones and things like that all the time. And you know, people's loved ones continue to maintain their graves, to keep them clean, to keep them tidy, to bring fresh flowers, and yeah, to give a wipe to the QR code will probably be part of that ritual going forward. Going forward, sorry, don't mean to say that, but in the future, you know what I mean.
No, I know what you mean. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, the thing is, like, it's £300 to get it put on the headstone. Mm. Well, up to £300, they say. Then an extra £95 to cover unlimited hosting, admin, and setup of the initial website. So it's like an extra £400. I don't know. I mean, how much do funerals run to these days? A couple of thousand, I suppose.
They can do. And so is this £95 will cover hosting for life? Is it, well, for the afterlife, I suppose. Or is this £95 a year or what?
Doesn't say.
Hmm.
But I mean, you know, 95 a year would be quite hefty.
It would, for what?
I mean, you're talking about basically a single page.
You are indeed. Yeah, no, it looks to me like, sorry, an additional cost of £95, it says, will cover the unlimited hosting, administration and initial setup of the personal website, which is run by Chester Pierce, this funeral directorship in Dorset. But here's the thing, Michele, you know, as you know, you're in the hosting business, but making a commitment to host something for what, forever? That's quite a commitment.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
It's
an odd one.
Yeah, you could probably extrapolate and say that, you know, if trends continue, the cost of hosting... I presume the cost of hosting is coming down per kilobyte, Michele, over, or has done, in would be the trend. You could probably say that this would vanish over time in terms of being an appreciable cost, and that maybe that £95 would be something that you could. But I mean, ultimately, nothing lasts forever. Even a gravestone, I presume, doesn't. I presume there's some limitation on that hosting, but it's interesting nonetheless.
I've seen companies offer, you know, hosting for life and things like that, and you know. I just wonder how that's going to play out in the grand scheme of things. I mean, you know, do people really realistically expect to get that for life if they've only paid, say, €100 or whatever whatever it is?
The real question, Michele, is now, I know, obviously, I know that you don't plan to die yourself, Michele, so that's fair enough. But if you did hypothetically die, would you want this?
I haven't really thought about that. I mean, I have worried about things like, okay, if I die in the morning, you know, what happens to various digital assets that I have? Mm. You know, that kind of thing would concern me. And it's something that, you know, people have spoken about quite a bit over the last couple of years. And I was talking to a colleague and another registrar earlier this evening, and you know, common kind of issues arise where, say, the domain holder dies, or there's a divorce, or there's some kind of business breakup, or God knows what. But it's one scenario he gave me this evening was, what happens when you're in the process of transferring a domain to a new registrant and the new registrant dies? What the hell do you do then? I mean, who is the registrant? The previous one or the new one? It can't be the new one, because the new one, it doesn't exist anymore. You know, it's rather messy. I mean, there's no simple answer to a lot of these questions.
I heard during the week, kind of secondhand, I don't have a link to this or anything, but I heard during the week on another technology podcast that I was listening to. It was Twit, actually, This Week in Tech. They were talking about Bruce Willis, apparently, is suing Apple because he wants the right. He has a considerable music collection that he has downloaded from iTunes. But as you know, we when we downloaded these songs from iTunes, we can't really sell them or pass them on to other people. They're licensed to ourselves, apparently, and that's just how it is. And when he dies, apparently that license expires, but he wants to be able to pass on his digital music collection to his daughters when he dies, and apparently is suing Apple over this. It sounds unlikely.
But he's not, you see, that's the thing.
What?
He's not suing Apple.
Is he not? No.
No. On Monday, the UK Sunday Times published the unverified story of actor Bruce Willis suing Apple over the right to bequeath his iTunes music collection to his daughters.
Ah.
Blah, 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 blah. No, it's not actually true.
Ah, so it didn't sound like it. It didn't sound very likely. So there you go. Let's just drop it.
But what is interesting is the entire query about, you know, who does own the digital data?
Yes.
So, I mean, there's an article on Rolling Stone, which I can send you a link to. It says, although phoning the story brought up a thought-provoking question, who owns our digital data? Mm. When agreeing to download songs on the iTunes store, users are paying for the license to listen to the song on an Apple device. They are not purchasing the song itself. So there you go.
So the issue is there, but, you know, it's not the case that he was actually taking them to court over it. But that is interesting nonetheless. Let's move on, Michele. Interactive Graves, crowdfunded gadgets directory you've linked to as well. It's on it's blogged on technology.ie as well. What's that about?
Well, you know the way there's a number of these crowdfunding sites out there. Kickstarter and Indiegogo are two of the very big ones in the US, but there's a load of other ones all over the place, and some of them are like fundit.ie, for example, is primarily focused on the arts and culture in Ireland, but there's loads of other ones. And this new site, outgrow.me, what they do is they collect together all the products that have been funded, so you can find them all in one place, and then you can actually buy them or pre-order them, rather than trying to make sense of the chaos that might be Kickstarter or Indiegogo. Because, you know, you go onto those websites, and what you're going to see are there's going to be thousands of things up there which are in various stages of funding, but it's not easy to find the stuff that has been funded. So what Outgrow.me does is it collates all that together for you, and you can browse the products. You can choose to go for, you know, stuff that is you can order it now, this minute, or stuff that it will be available soon.
Mm. So it's a collection of I suppose cool ideas in a way, and the only thing they have in common is that they were all crowdfunded.
No, that they're not only are they crowdfunded, but they're either available to buy or will be available to buy soon.
Okay, but as opposed to other things which are available to buy, which haven't been crowdfunded and have been basically financed and developed in a more traditional way. But so what you're getting here is some things that, and the interesting thing about crowdfunded things is that they are very often things that are imaginative and attractive enough that they attracted people not just to buy them, but in fact to invest in them or to help to make them happen.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I'm just looking on the Outgrow Me site at the moment. I mean, there's stuff up there, and, you know, you look and you're going to go, oh my God, that's a really cool concept. Mm. Or the other things, you might scratch your head and go, okay, I can see how some people might want this, but obviously enough people did. And, you know, it's just, you know, there's some kind of funky things. And what they've done is they've organized us using tags or categories, whatever you want to talk about. So the stuff for photography, iPhone accessories, iPad accessories. You can search by price. So, you know, under $25, $25 to $75, $75 and $250, over $150. And, you know, some of the stuff is... you know, it's really kind of cool. I mean, there's this thing here, for example, just poking around the site now, the Nifty Mini Drive, which is, well, it's basically a 64 gig MacBook, memory or hard drive? Not sure. I think it's memory. So you can actually up the memory on the machine. But, I mean, it's, you know, these are kind of funky and cool. So, I mean, it's something I saw, thought it was kind of interesting. So did up a quick post on it. So there you go.
Excellent. And it's on technology.ie. Coming up in part two of the show, as I said, we're going to talk about some of the new releases, what's coming out from Microsoft, from Nokia, what might be announced by Apple next week. And also we're going to talk about the Web Index, which is a new project which has published data just recently, which Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the World Wide Web, is involved with. We'll talk about that and how well Ireland scores on the International Web Index as well in part two of the show. But first, just one more thing before we talk about Black Knight's special offers this week. Michele, you've linked to Bosco Verticale. How's my pronunciation?
Not bad.
I've been listening to you and learning. The world's first vertical forest. What is this about?
This is really, really cool. It's a vertical forest, and what it is actually, it's a building which is an eco-friendly building. So basically, the building, I don't know how to explain this. Because I mean, looking at the photos and everything else, and
Should link to this. I think we'll put the picture in with the blog post this week. So it's a building several stories high. Does this exist, or is it just a concept at this stage?
It's being built.
Being built, and what it looks like is basically you can see on every story. It's like a whole lot of balconies with forests and trees on them, which is going to... And I know this is something that architects are involved in very much, that when you plant a whole lot of trees, for example, in an atrium, for example, in a large building or a large office complex, it affects the climate inside in that building. You have these microclimates. This is applying that on a very grand scale and for ecological and environmental... friendly purposes.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, they're building this in Milan, and Milan is, how can I put this genteelly? Milan has a serious pollution problem.
Okay.
I lived in Milan for about 3 years, and the pollution in Milan is so bad at times that you can actually just look out across the city and you can see this kind of yellowy, brown, dirty blanket of, I mean, I think the best word to use is crap, kind of hovering over the city. And so what they do sometimes to help mitigate the pollution is they restrict which cars can drive into the city. So they do it based on whether your registration number is even or uneven. So, you know, on certain days only even, and other days uneven, and other days they just ban cars from the city completely. And so this thing, you know, building it somewhere in Milan makes perfect sense because the quality of the air there is pretty awful. What they're talking about here is that this system, you know, produces humidity, will absorb CO2, dust particles, producing oxygen, and protecting the building from radiation and acoustic pollution, which, you know, in a big city... Mm. can be a serious problem.
And it's being touted as an answer to urban sprawl as well. And essentially what they're doing is, okay, so you want to combat CO2, you want to improve the environment, sure, plant trees. But what about if you plant trees? So the normal way, we just plant trees on the ground and that's fine. But what about if you plant trees and stack them up vertically, basically, and essentially you're going for density, not just of housing, which this is an apartment block as well, which by the sounds of it could be very pleasant to live in. You're going for not just density of population and density of housing, which is going to combat a lot of environmental problems as well, but you're going for density of this greenery as well.
Yeah, and the thing is, but the design is such that it's going to help with the energy costs as well. Because, I mean, they're saying it optimizes, recuperates, and produces energy. So not only does it help give you cleaner air, it'll also help with cooling it during the summer. Because I think one of the things about Milan in the summer, like in August, it gets so bad that, you know, people literally, you know, the suicide rate in Milan spikes.
Right.
It's unbearable temperature during the summer. So I mean, this is all, you know, this kind of concept, you know, if it can help keep the place cool. I mean, in Milan in the middle of the summer, you end up where you have, if you don't have air conditioning, you're just sitting there, just, you know, the sweat pouring off, you're panting. And you know, you can't sleep during the day or the evening. You end up kind of staying up half the bloody night until the temperature drops low enough that you can actually get some sleep. Now, it's a fascinating concept, and it was one of the guys from Doc Green that I think they tweeted a link to that or shared it on their Facebook page. And I thought to myself, wow, this is really cool.
I didn't know you were an environmentalist, Michele.
I'm not really. I mean, there's lots of things you don't know about me, Colin.
I guess so. I mean, we know about your I suppose you have a lot of interests. We know about your technology interests. We've talked a lot about some of those on the show. We know about some of the other things that you're interested in and enjoy in that as well. But I guess, you know, for very often for techies and people like us, we're interested very often when we see innovative technological solutions to environmental problems. You know, we see it as a win-win, really, because we get excited about technology for its own sake, and the environmental benefit is a bonus.
Well, the environmental thing, I mean, the thing about green stuff in general, green technology, is a lot of the time it can save you money. Mm. You know, like say for example, you take a television. If you go back a few years back, you'd have had a really big TV with the massive cathode ray tube. Whereas nowadays, they're all pretty flat. I mean, they're going to be using LCD, LED, or one of the other technologies. And if you actually look at the amount of power they're drawing, it's dropped significantly. Like, I mean, for us, for example, in the office, initially when we started out, all the computer monitors were, you know, the big traditional boxes. But over time, we switched across to flat screens. And it actually did a number of things. First off, they were cooler to run. And they use less electricity. They take up less space. They're easier on your eyes. I mean, you know, it's a win-win.
It's all good. Let's talk about Black Knight this week. Michele, of course, Black Knight sponsor technology.ie. You're the managing director of Black Knight Solutions in Carlow. Domains and web hosting, Ireland's only accredited ICANN domain registrar, or ICANN accredited, I should say, domain registrar. What do you want to talk about this week, Michele?
Well, we're still doing this promotion on .ie domain names, where you can get a .ie domain name, either a new registration or a transfer, for only $5.99 when you buy an annual hosting plan. So, I mean, that's a pretty good offer, even if I do say so myself. Because, you know, a domain name by itself isn't much use to anybody. You can't frame a domain name, put it on the wall, and decorate it, though at times I wish you could. So, you know, this kind of thing, you know, you get your, as a business or a blogger or whatever, you have everything you want with, you know, your domain, your hosting, and, you know, entry-level hosting plan. I mean, it's 50-odd euro a year, expat. So, you know, it's not expensive. It is not expensive, Colm. And, of course, we're still doing
promotions on both .co and .me domain names. You can either get them free if you pay for one of our larger hosting plans, or you get them at a huge discount on one of our other plans.
Excellent. You can find out more on the website at blackknight.com, and in particular on the blog at blog.blackknight.com.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
You're listening to Technology.ie, the podcast brought to you by Black Knight and presented each week by myself, Conor Muinichon, and Black Knight CEO, Michaela Nealon. Michaela, you've posted also this week a link to me in relation to the Web Index, which is a project which Tim Berners-Lee is involved in. It's all about, I suppose, assessing which countries in the world are getting the best benefits from Tim Berners-Lee's invention of the World Wide Web.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. I mean, these kind of, you see a lot of indices being produced by, you know, the EU, the OECD, and all these other wonderful acronyms that don't mean a lot to most of us. But getting one from somebody like Tim Berners-Lee, you kind of go, oh, hold on a second. Mm. Now, this is a lot more interesting. This is something that I might want to pay attention to. So the Register did an article about it, I think it was earlier today, actually. Today is the 5th, isn't it? Hmm. It is, yes. Sorry, I've no idea the date half the time. What they did is they ranked 61 countries in 7 different categories to assess the impact of the internet in each. So the kind of things they're looking at is, you know, broadband pricing, censorship, and a number of other criteria. So the top 10 in Europe, you know, you have Sweden. Sorry, the top 10, which also includes ones from Europe. Sweden, it turns out, ranks the best. Mm. But Ireland didn't do badly. Even though last week, if you remember, we were talking about that one broadband plan.
That's right, yeah. Ireland is ranking number 10 and number 10 worldwide and number 6 in Europe, and number 10 out of 61 countries that have been ranked on this particular thing, which isn't bad. And we're in there behind whom? Behind Sweden, United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Finland, Switzerland, New Zealand, Australia, Norway, and we're in there then at number 10 is Ireland. And there's a breakdown, as you say, for each of these countries, how we score on various things. Readiness, we score 84.48. I presume that's a percentage on that. Communications infrastructure, we score 76%. We rank 16th on that. We rank above average or above our rank of 10 on web content. What that means exactly, I don't know, that we produce it or that we consume it. We're ranked 7th overall on that. We rank number 1 on this for the economic impact of the World Wide Web in this country. So of all of the countries surveyed, the Irish economy is impacted more, most of all, by the World Wide Web. So, which I presume means that we can thank a certain proportion of our GDP for the likes of the various internet and technological companies who have chosen to base their headquarters here in Ireland. And if it wasn't for the internet, we wouldn't have that economic impact. Is that how you read it?
Yeah, that's not exactly what I was thinking as well. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the number of Irish jobs, the percentage of the overall whatever metric you want to use that is tied back either directly or indirectly to web companies. I mean, I suppose the thing is, it's because of our rather small size. You know, if we were a bigger country, then that number would be quite, that's not the number, how do I put it? The proportional impact would be lower because, you know, let's say you look at a country with a population 10 times our size, and then the number, the actual percentage and all that kind of thing would drop significantly. But for a small country, oh my God, what was that? For a small country, it's had a huge impact. So I think that's probably where that's coming from.
Yeah.
The other things as well, Con, of course, are things like, you know, the press freedoms. And I just sent you another link there to, to a photo I took of a graphic of the world from Newseum in Washington, D.C., which breaks down the world by the level of press freedom. And you can see there, you know, Ireland ranks very, very well.
That's kind of, yeah, it's kind of shocking to look at, and it's probably not surprising. It's a colour-coded map of the world. Green equals free, freedom of the press. Red equals restricted, and yellow has some freedom. Much of South America and India and Southern and Western Africa are showing up yellow. All the places you'd expect, Canada, America, Western Europe, including Ireland, all showing up green on that. And then Eastern Europe showing up yellow, which is kind of some freedom. But then restrictions all across Russia, the Middle East, much of Asia, and indeed Northern and Eastern Africa as well. Very, very interesting map. Where did you come across that? That was someplace that was in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, this absolutely amazing venue in Washington, D.C. called Newseum. I think it's how you pronounce it, which is it's mind-boggling. They describe it as an interactive museum of news and journalism. And it covers all aspects of media and both historical and, you know, current. It's just absolutely fascinating. I mean, of course, being in D.C., you know, in the U.S., there's a big section on 9/11 and press coverage around the world. But there's other things in there, you know, coverage of certain events, down through history. I mean, absolutely. It's one of those places that you could go into and you could lose yourself in there for days. I mean, fascinating, fascinating venue.
Getting back for a moment, Michele, to the web index to the, as you said, it was an article in the Register which first drew your attention to this. And it's interesting that, we talked earlier about the TechCrunch article and the snarky tone of it. There's a little bit of snark in this article as well from the Register, but I think they've got a point. And it's in this particular article, it says, in relation to the web index by Sir Tim Berners-Lee, World Wide Web Foundation, it said the main criteria appeared to be that lots of people should be able to get on the net and lots of stuff should be there for them to look at. So in a completely unsurprising development, the top 10 countries in the index were filled out by wealthier democracies with passable technological infrastructure, with Canada, New Zealand and Australia in there along with four other European countries. And it also says, in case these results are a surprise to you, the explanation is that they all have very few restrictions on access to the net and all more or less speak English. And this English speaking thing is interesting because the Register article points out that six of the top 10 countries are primarily English speaking, including Ireland, the fourth European country, and the other four in the top 10 are Sweden and Norway and Switzerland, which are countries that have a good handle on languages, and Scandinavian countries in particular are good at English. So is that a fair point in relation to this, Michele?
Well, I'd say it actually probably is. I mean, I'm surprised. I mean, I'd have to look at the full ranking to see where some other countries go, because I mean, I'd expect to see Germany and
It's interesting to think that we're ahead in Germany in terms of our web index, if you like. If you look at the Irish page in the web index which you send me, it includes further down there on the regional ranking, it includes the shows where we sit in the European ranking, which is sixth after Norway and ahead of Iceland, France, Germany, Portugal, Spain, Italy, Poland, Turkey and the Russian Federation at number 15 on that list.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the list, at the full list here, and, you know, Poland ranks 25th, but that's actually higher than the Netherlands. And I'm still scrolling here and I haven't found them.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird. Mm-hmm. But then again, maybe they didn't even look at them. I don't know, but it's one of these things. When you look at, say, the new TLDs, the new TLD applications, the bulk of them came from rich white countries.
So if you look at the actual breakdown, North America had 911 applications. Europe had 687. Asia Pacific had 291. Latin America had 24, and Africa had 17. So, you know, that kind of divide thing. I mean, this comes back to the digital divide. I mean, whether the criteria that were used in the study were valid or not isn't really that important, because that digital divide paradigm will exist regardless. I mean, you know, it's not as if that, you know, rejigging the figures is suddenly going to thrust Africa to the top of the index.
So what you're saying is it's not a coincidence. The correlation is probably not valid between, let's say, English speaking and successful use of the internet, because in actual fact they are both probably associated with basically successful infrastructure and reasonably developed economies as well. So fair enough, you know, it's interesting to see, I suppose, that we're scoring quite well on that. And as you say, in the context of what we were talking about last week with Damien and the government's new fantasy broadband plan. Sorry, I'm going to keep calling that for the next 2 years until we actually see if we discovered that we have this super fast internet, thanks to Minister Pat Rabbit and the various technological companies who are going to roll it all out for us. Let's talk about Apple, Michele, and it's almost here, they say. Are you excited?
No. I mean, the thing with Apple, and it's one of the genius things about Apple as a company, that they've managed to create this entire mythology around themselves. So every, you know, if anybody in Apple, you know, burps, it's going to make a headline. Which is fantastic for Apple.
So they've sent out these cryptic invitations to the media for an event in San Francisco on September 12th. All it says is, it's almost here. And you see the number 12, which indicates the date, September 12th. But the shadow that it casts isn't 12, in fact, but 5. And the speculation is that they're going to unveil the iPhone 5.
Yes. Now, what the iPhone 5 will be, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, there's been so much media speculation about this over the last few months. I would hope that it'll have better battery life. I mean, you know, it would be amazing if Apple were to produce an iPhone 5 where I could actually have a spare battery, but I can't see that happening. Now, this, you know, you can go off. Anybody who's interested in this has probably been reading all the wild speculation, so there's no point harping on about it. We'll find out more next week, whether that's a new iPhone, which many people are hoping for, or whether it's the announcement of something else. But I'd say at this stage it probably is going to be a new iPhone.
Interesting. We will look forward to finding out. That's on the 12th, which is this day week. So, Michele, so we should know by the time we do the next edition of technology.ie. Speaking of battery life, the new announcements by Nokia are promising in that regard. They've announced two new phones. Is it?
Yeah, they've announced the Lumia 920 and the Lumia 820. They had a live webcast of the event this afternoon. They're both Windows Phone 8 devices. I mean, they're both quite colourful. I mean, the photos that I've got of them look fantastic. The 920 has a very big battery. I mean, that's one thing kind of, you know, jumped off the page of the press release. And it also supports this new this thing called wireless charging, which, to be honest, I didn't have a clue what the hell it was. So the idea, I think, is that it's somehow you're able to charge your phone wirelessly. Don't really understand that. But they've done a couple of partnership deals already with a couple of companies, and they're also looking at getting these charging stations put in into the London Heathrow Virgin Atlantic Lounge, as well as Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf,
which I presume is some kind of cafe in Heathrow. I don't fly through Heathrow much, so...
This is something I think I've heard about before, which is a kind of inductive charging, in that you can take your device and put it down on a surface which then induces current in it and essentially charges... you know, similar perhaps to the way that a transformer works
so it's not actually wireless. It is wireless in the sense there's no wire cable, yeah. But it's not actually...
I'm not even sure that's what that's about. And to be honest, I've never seen any device like that, but I'm just guessing that's probably what's involved. Be interesting to find out more about it. I think I'm ready for a new phone, Michele.
Well, I mean, the thing with the Windows phone users... you know, they go on about how wonderful they are. Now, okay, I'll admit I'm an iPhone.
Do you know any Windows phone users, Michele? Because I don't.
Oh, I do.
Do you?
Well, of course I do.
Anyone I know?
No. But I mean, I've got staff who, I mean, one of our staff actually sent me links earlier today when I was writing about the pre-announcement. Mm. And you know, Mark, who works for us, is, you know, he's very big into Microsoft products and you know, knows them very, very well. And as far as I know, he has a Windows phone, which he loves. And I think one or two of our staff might also have them or have had them in the past. I mean, others have Androids, and a lot of them have iPhones.
I've been touting Android for the last year, Michele. The shine is wearing off just a little bit. I'm not sure if I'm going to go back to iPhone, and we'll see what Apple announced next week. But there are a number of things. Like, there's this ridiculous thing in a number of Android phones that I've encountered in at least two, I should say, that Android phones that I've used, which is that it seems to run out of memory or storage or whatever. And there seems to be a constant battle with the number of apps that you can install and the amount of data or the amount of storage space that they use, which quite frankly is utterly ridiculous. I bought the biggest SD card or whatever that you could, micro SD or whatever I think that you add in. I bought the biggest amount of storage that you could put into this. I came from the iPhone world, where I was used to using it as an iPod really as well. And it's absolutely ridiculous to be constantly battling over what apps you can install and uninstall. And it's across the board. I have it on a Samsung device right now and on a HTC device that I used previously. And it's an absolute joke. And I can't believe that it's still an issue in Android. So the shine is wearing off for a number of reasons. And even, you know, this particular Samsung Android device I'm using right now, you know, it's not an iPhone, and I'm beginning to see a lot of gaps in terms of quality and performance and things like that, and that's all fine and grand. But I am interested, and as you know, I've been traditionally a Microsoft fan and user myself. I'm excited about Windows 8 and what's going to be announced later. I'm excited about Microsoft Surface, which is their tablet come laptop device they're going have available, I think, from next month. And I might just look at one of these Nokia Lumia devices as well.
Well, I mean, the thing with phones, I mean, you know, the conversation you end up having a lot of the time is, you know, you go to Vodafone or O2 or Three or Meteor or whoever, and you know, you talk to them and say, right, you know, I'm on this particular plan. What upgrade options are available? And you know, my mother got an Android, must be 6 months or more ago, because you know, the phone she'd had was, you know, it wasn't up to much. She wanted a new phone, and she was able to get an Android either for free on, as long as she signed up with them for, I don't know, whatever period of time, or practically for nothing. I mean, so it's a subsidized device. Mm. With these two Nokia ones, the 920, I'd say, it might be subsidized, but I'd say you're still going to have to pay over for it, because it's got a pretty high spec. Mm. The 820, on the other hand, looks to be a little bit more kind of aimed at the slightly more youthful market, because you can swap out the shells. So if you okay. swap, you can, if you don't like having a yellow shell, you can have a red shell or a silver shell. And I'm not sure how that's going to pan out in terms of, you know, physically, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's the kind of thing where, you know, you'll soon be able to buy different types of shells for these phones, assuming, of course, that they take off. I mean, this, the other thing is, you know, is Nokia going to be able to make a comeback sooner rather than later, or are they going to go the way of the Dodo?
It's a strong fight back, and I think it's probably their last chance, Michele, so we'd be very interested to see how that turns out. I just might get my hands on a Lumia maybe in the next month or two, and certainly going to be interested to hear from people. And if you are a user of Windows phones out there, if you are excited about these new Lumia devices and other devices running Windows Phone 8, do get in touch with us. Leave a comment on the blog at technology.ie. And finally, Michele, we're going from small Microsoft products to very large ones. Enterprise class Windows Server 2012 is launched.
Yes. I'm sorry. I mean, this is, again, it's one of these things that it's not something that, you know, your average user is going to really care about. It's more for the, as you say, the enterprise business user or somebody who is, you know, a Windows developer. I mean, in terms of the licensing, what's interesting is that Microsoft has simplified the licensing. Because one of the problems that with Microsoft products over the years, I mean, fine, on the desktop, you know, you had Office and you had, you know, maybe three different license versions. But, I mean, that wasn't...
Infuriating, Michele, to be quite honest with you.
There was only three.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I had a situation where I bought, for the Office, I bought a Windows fairly high-spec PC, and when it arrived, I discovered it was running, whatever it was at the time, Windows Super Duper Home Edition only, which meant there was a whole load of stuff in relation to authentication and domains and sharing and things like that that you would expect to do in a business or an office environment that I just could not do. And I can't remember what it was in particular, but there was something really basic that I wanted to do that I was absolutely infuriated to discover was impossible with whatever I had bought. I suppose I should have looked at the fine print more closely when I bought the system, but it can be infuriating, and I don't see the value for it, because essentially at the end of the day, you know, it's just software. It doesn't cost them any more or less to ship you a different type of edition.
Well, no, yes and no. I mean, the problem with the, like, from our perspective, you know, we're a Microsoft partner, and, you know, people will come along and go, oh, you know, I want Microsoft SQL Server. And a couple of years back, I mean, it was like you'd practically have to go through a kind of a questionnaire with them. You know, how many of this do you want, and how big will this be, and how blah, blah, blah. I mean, it was really, really, really confusing. But, you know, they simplified that. With the launch of Server 2012, they get rid of a whole load of this confusion, because a couple of versions back, they introduced the concept of this web edition. And the initial launch of web edition, which I think was Server 2003, web edition was, you know, it was bloody useless, because you could use it to run a web server, but as far as I can recall, you couldn't even use it to connect up to an SQL server. It was bloody pointless. Then in the more recent one, they kept the web edition, but then they allowed you to do a couple of other things with it, which made it a little bit more useful. But again, you had all these kind of crazy restrictions. So, you know, and there were huge jumps in the price between one edition and another. So now they've simplified it again. The new thing comes along. It's got IIS 8, which is the web server. There's CPU throttling. There's more. You can do funkier things with SSL certs, which helps when you are running out of IP addresses, which is becoming more and more of a problem. FTP brute force protection, which is good. And, you know, there's a few other bits and pieces there. And I mean, it's the kind of thing that, you know, for a hosting provider, it's something we look at, because, I mean, there's all sorts of things here. It's, you know, virtualization. And doing stuff in kind of virtualizing machines and everything, which, you know, it's where Microsoft is putting a lot of their energy and focus at the moment.
So you are offering this to customers on your cloud servers?
We're offering it on cloud and on dedicated, yes.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it's you know, if you're developing and you want the latest technologies, then you know this makes sense. Mm. But again, I mean, the fun thing is that you know you still find people who are stuck with web application software that they can't, which means that you know they're still stuck on really old versions and they can't upgrade, which is a problem. And that's just not going to go away anytime soon. But you know, there's new stuff there. There's the Windows; they're constantly making changes, but. Again, if you look at the interfaces, it's all becoming very kind of shiny and tablet-y and you know iPhone-esque or something. Mm. And all the Windows fanboys are now going to want to crucify me.
So, I mean, how does someone administer this, Michele, now if they have a server with you, a dedicated or a cloud server running Windows Server 2012? Would they use something like a remote desktop connection or something like that to connect to that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah, I mean, remote desktop connection. I mean, if you're doing anything on Windows, that's the sanest way to do it. I mean, what you will find in a few months is that the automation vendors, you know, the likes of Parallels and there's a few other ones out there, they will offer support for this. So you'll have things like, you know, Server 2012 with Plesk.
Right.
So if you're not comfortable RDPing into a machine and playing around with IIS settings yourself, you know, you've got a bit of software that'll handle all that stuff for you. But that won't be ready for, I'm not too sure how long, probably a couple of months.
Okay, very good. Very interesting, Michele, and very exciting. And thanks for giving us the insight on that as well. And we must talk again, as we said, in more detail. We must get Paul, your CTO, on sometime to talk about what you're doing with your new data centre that you're building, of course, in Carlow as well, and some of the technology that's involved in that. We talked about that last week. I'm definitely interested in talking about it again on technology.ie. And as always, Michele, thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Paul.